The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another spring training edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Just about 30 minutes ago, as of this recording, Blake Snell finally comes off of the free agent market. He will go to the San Francisco Giants. And that ends up being a two-year, $62 million deal with an opt-out after the first year. The Giants will also have to give up a compensation draft pick, I think in between the first and second rounds, to the San Diego Padres. So finally, one of the last two, has come off the board. I am Terry Cushman, joined tonight by Cody Paulson, Nick Face. How are you, gentlemen?
Gentlemen, always fun to be on with you here. We got saved by some big news. I know this is one of the dominoes that we were looking at falling all spring training. So good to be able to kind of break it down, debrief it a little bit, and just kind of leaves one elephant in the room left. But Nick, how are you doing tonight?
I'm happy that Blake Snell is a Giant. I was a little worried as the saga continued that we may see him creep by and maybe sneak in with the Yankees or maybe sneak in with the Rays or something in there that would make it harder for the Sox. I wasn't super big on Snell being a Red Sox, so I don't really look at this as a, oh, the Red Sox could have had him kind of thing. I think I've always been more on that durability side of things. And still, if there was a want, my want was always a Jordan Montgomery. Now that one's off the board, the other one shouldn't be too far away. But I still think it's going to be a matter of if the price is right with the Red Sox. Will that happen with them? We haven't seen any inklings that it's going to happen. You know, I think that he wants to be a Red Sox, Jordan Montgomery, but when it comes down to dollars and years and everything, I don't think the Red Sox are going to give him the best deal on that matter. So where he ends up, not sure.
The Giants have quietly put together a pretty good offseason. I like the ESPN depth chart, but it keeps coming up blank on me. So I'm going to have to go to the MLB one, but having Logan Webb and then Blake Snell at the top of your rotation, that is a great 1-2 punch. I forget, what's the name of the field in San Francisco? Isn't it
Oracle Park now?
Is it Oracle Park? Okay. Probably the most pitcher-friendly stadium in all of MLB. And if it's not number one, it's got to be top two or three. Petco Park, relatively pitcher friendly. They made it a little bit less pitcher friendly in the last decade, but still not a bad place to pitch. And I just think it's going to suit Snell pretty good. They also have Jordan Hicks. That's kind of a science project though, because he's been a reliever previously. They're going to stretch him out as a starter a lot of teams had some interest in doing that. So, and I'm not sure about Robbie Ray's status. I'm guessing he should be available at some point in the summer. So this quietly is a very good baseball team. I'm just looking. I mean, they added Matt Chapman.
Forgot that real big move, jokingly. Pablo Sandoval's in there for a non-roster spring training invitee. I don't know if you remember that, but that's pretty funny too.
You know, he is listed on their depth chart.
That's hysterical.
Okay. When you said that, I'm like, oh, he's coming back as a coach or something.
Oh, no. Kung Fu Panda, baby.
The one thing he's not coming back as is the team nutritionist. I mean, I think we can rule that out.
Have you seen a picture of him recently?
Is he slim?
I think he's been eating a couple salads from wherever. He looks like a completely different man. Kudos to him.
Okay. Well, they've got Jorge Soler, someone I highly coveted. They've got Jung Hoo Lee. I forget if he's from the Japanese market or the Korean market, but still one of the highly touted players from across the Pacific. Michael Conforto could have a decent bounce back year this year. So it's interesting. You know, you got the Diamondbacks going to the World Series, looking, you know, pretty good. They added Eduardo Rodriguez, Lourdes Gurriel, or actually he was there, I believe. But still, and then of course the Dodgers. So we'll see. I'm not as high on the Dodgers. Like a lot of people are, like automatic World Series contender. I mean, who's to say the Braves, the Phillies don't get there again? You know, you get hot in October. I mean, nobody, just the last two teams in the World Series, for crying out loud. Nobody had the Diamond. Well, I did have the Diamondbacks. Pat myself on the back. They were my third wild card team, but I never in a million years thought they were going to the World Series when I made that pick. And then the Rangers. I mean, most people did not have those two teams even in the playoffs, and that was your World Series. So I'm not taking it to the bank with the Dodgers, but the Giants, suddenly interesting. They got a new manager too, Bob Melvin. So we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, I mean, you put it there great, right? One of the things I wanted to talk about was their offseason between the Chapman signing, the Soler signing, the trade for Robbie Ray. And a trade for Robbie Ray for a team like the Giants makes so much sense because you have a deep rotation, right? It's not a guy that you needed to plug in and immediately get, you know, a return on investment for. Between Hicks, as you mentioned, and Webb, you know, he has a little bit of a softer landing spot. They still have Kyle Harrison and Alex Cobb, who has just been about as consistent goes. And so, you know, with that pitcher-friendly ballpark, Blake Snell doesn't have to be the guy that he had to be for San Diego or for Tampa Bay for them to be successful. You know, he can kind of find his footing, have a hot second half of the season, and really turn this team, you know, make them turn the corner. Because, you know, while people, I think, maybe have had the Rangers in the World Series prior to the beginning of the season, once all of those injuries surmounted, I don't think they were a very popular pick, and the Giants right now have what looks like a lot of depth all across the roster. And, you know, baseball is a war of attrition, as they say. So, you know, the more players that you have that can, you know, kind of next man up mentality, the better that they're going to be as the season wears on.
Has anybody done a check on Andrew Bailey yet? Make sure he actually wants to stick with the Red Sox or his pitching coach. Cause look at all the good stuff that just came for the Giants and he's not there. He gone. But how about the Padres in this whole matter with the Giants? Number one, they steal their manager, and now they get Blake Snell.
Yeah, you know.
Wow.
There's this toxicity in San Diego between A.J. Preller and anybody who serves as his manager.
Heard that.
Yeah. I mean, I thought Bob Melvin was going to be the guy to finally right the ship. They had that, was it Jace Tingler was prior to him, and there were some controversies there. I forget who was even before Tingler.
Wasn't it Josh Burns? Wasn't it a Red Sox guy at one point?
I don't know. But it just seems like it ends up, they only end up lasting a couple of years, and it's toxic, and they just can't wait to get out. And so I think now that Melvin is back in San Francisco, having only pitched, managed across the bridge in Oakland, it's a very familiar environment. He's one of the most well-respected managers in the game. And before Aaron Boone was hired by the Yankees, they tried making a play on Bob Melvin. He was high on their list, and in Oakland was still pretty good at the time, was kind of more of a wild card contender because Houston was still the juggernaut that they were for a while.
Say the Red Sox at one point had interest too
in Melvin.
I believe so.
Maybe. I don't know.
I think it was before Farrell, or during that whole thing, if they couldn't make the move with Farrell. I think his name was in some sort of a contention there.
Could have been. Charrington and Farrell were friends, going back to, quite a while, even before Farrell was the pitching coach in Boston. But yeah, so it's just really interesting. And the other observation that, has kind of been at the forefront for me is you were seeing numbers kicked around for Snell. If he would have taken the Yankees offer, that was 6 years, $168 million, $106 million more than what he was forced to accept today from the Giants. And then with the Astros over the weekend, they balked at 2 years, $60 million. They thought it was too much. And again, they'd have to give up a pick to sign him because Snell was given the qualifying offer by the Padres. But so you're seeing figures for Blake Snell. You're not seeing any figures for Jordan Montgomery. We have no idea where they're at. Well, Boris, as recently as a few weeks ago or a couple weeks ago, was still asking for 7 years. So you got to think they've probably come down to earth, but we don't know what the other teams are offering, where the teams are at. It's just insane. And he does not have a pick. The Rangers could not give him the qualifying offer because they only acquired him halfway through the season at the deadline. So you can't attach a qualifying offer to a player under those circumstances. So there's no real restrictions here as far as Montgomery, but his market is just, who knows what it is.
I wonder if you start seeing a tide turn against Boris with athletes signing with him, because this isn't the first time that he's kind of bungled the prized jewel of free agency. He's told them to hold the line. He's told them to wait. He's told them to turn money down. And, time and time again, at least this offseason, it hasn't worked out well. The guys are taking deals well below market value. They're trying to get in to get some spring training exposure to get their timing right so that they're able to play and contribute early on in the season. And, if Boris continues this trend of thinking that he can, walk tall or carry a big stick or, move in the shadows, whatever saying you want, where he doesn't do, he lets the money and the moves and the leaks do the work for him. It hasn't really paid out this year. Nobody's overpaid. Nobody's felt that pressure yet. And we've seen the injuries in spring training already crop up, and that hasn't led to a desperate move. So I really wonder if Boris is going to be the gold standard that he used to be.
That's an excellent point. I think I've raised that in recent shows. I think if you're an elite player in your prime, I think Boris is still your guy. Now, if you're a mid-market player, like a guy like Blake Snell is, like Jordan Montgomery, like Matt Chapman, I don't know that Boris is your guy. Those are the contracts he's botching right now. And recently, I got into it. So Chapman signed for $54 million, could have taken an extension last season for $120. So he gets less than half his value. Blake Snell, way, way less than half his value. I want to say there was at least one more. Well, I don't know that the Cody Bellinger deal was a bad one. I mean, 3 years, 80. I think there's some opt-outs in there. That's not terrible. I mean, I just think his value was kind of artificially inflated, you know, with those talks of over 200 plus. But I thought he got a pretty good deal to go back to the Cubs. But I don't know. Maybe Boris might have to reinvent himself when dealing with those mid-level clients, or he's 71 years old. Maybe
I was just going to bring that up. He's old. He's on the back nine right now. And I just think that he's so 10 years ago.
Yeah. It's just a different world now.
And I think that I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 4 or 5 years he retires and he's done.
Yeah. I don't see why not. And another thing about Montgomery, too, everybody's getting opt-outs. Now, let's say the Red Sox, and I'll admit, I mean, their pitching's been pretty good as far as spring training goes. I mean, that doesn't mean a lot, but let's say they want to make a play for Montgomery, but Montgomery wants an opt-out after 1 year. I don't think that makes any sense for the Red Sox. Maybe it's after 2 years. Okay. All right. Because next year you're going to have Giolito, presumably. And then you'd have one more year of Montgomery. But if he's going to get an opt out after year one, how much sense does that make?
Especially with kind of the unknown going into this season and where this team is actually going to head. I'm sure John Henry was going to say, why the hell would I even do 1 year for this? For what? What's the reason? I'm sure that's processing in his mind.
I mean, it really comes down to what is the direction with the prospects, right? If you're going to re-sign a lot of your prospects to long-term deals, to team-friendly deals, then you can maybe do these 1 or 2 year kind of bridge deals, gap deals, take some of the immediate pressure off of those prospects, bring a veteran in, let them learn underneath, and kind of move from there. But Terry, as you've mentioned, you know, here's the bad news. There's not a lot of pitching depth in the system at this moment in time. So if you bring in a guy like Montgomery, which would be great, I think all of us would be thrilled to have him. Who is he teaching, right? You know, he can teach a Bayo. Awesome. Bayo's got connections to Pedro. I kind of think I'd like to follow that first. But, you know, there's nobody else really that's moldable or, you know, somebody that needs to be, taken under the wing of a seasoned veteran. So that could be something else that they're kind of kicking around. You know, maybe they want to bolster up the, the prospect capital or the arms that they can groom before they go out and make those splashes to bring in those veterans, to bring in the guys that want to teach. You know, however, my thought would be you want to build kind of that loyalty or that fondness to a franchise, right? You want those veterans that have been there for a long time that are willing to put in the work, willing to put in the effort because they believe in the brand of the Boston Red Sox, as opposed to, you know, the Ryan Tannehill, I'm not here to coach the next guy kind of mentality, right? Because these athletes, they're wired a little bit differently, as they should be. You know, it is such a difficult road to get to where they are. They had to overcome so much to be who they are, believe in themselves so much that everybody's a competitor, everybody's a challenger. And so the ones that are willing to mentor, the ones that are willing to kind of help the next generation are the special ones. And I don't think many guys come in day one being willing to do that. So I would personally like to see, you know, somebody like Montgomery in here in a long-term capacity, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to end up happening.
But, and, you know, hopefully if it does, the ultimate long shot, hopefully it makes sense. It's under terms that make sense. All right. So and one last thing I just wanted to touch on super brief. Robbie Ray is expected to be back at the start of May. So he's way ahead of all these other Tommy John guys, McClanahan, DeGrom, Jeffrey Springs. So that's interesting. I also didn't realize that Robbie Ray was 36 years old. I thought he was like 33, 34. But all right, so let's since we're talking pitching, let's get into some Red Sox pitching. Your 1-2 punch at the top of the rotation is Bayo and Pivetta, in whichever order you want to put them. That's kind of sad going into opening day, but that is what it is. We'll start with Cody. Who do you think should start?
You know, you had asked us this question earlier in the day, and I've been kind of flipping on it in my mind ever really since you asked me, right? Because you can look at it as, oh, it should be Bayo. They just gave him the extension. He's the new toy, belief in the prospects, you know, try to foster some goodwill in the farm system. All that makes sense. But then at the same time, you look at Pivetta, a guy who went through it last year, right? One of the holdovers from a team that has had success, had gone through some trials and tribulations, moved into the bullpen, found some success in that role, kind of took his lumps. You know, we all kind of chastised him for the way that he received the news that he was being moved to the bullpen. We opened up in Seattle, close to his hometown. I'm going to go with Pivetta. I think this team is going to be built on vibes this year and built on, you know, clubhouse camaraderie and making sure that everybody's feeling good and believing in themselves. And I think that's the perfect story to go with it. You know, Bayo is going to have many opportunities, knock on wood, in the future to tote the rock on opening day. So I'm going to go with Pivetta for no real good reasons. Then, you know, it's close to the hometown. He can get his family there. It'll be a great feel good story. Hopefully we can start the season off on the right foot and kind of get rolling there.
Nick,
I'm going to echo the sentiments of Cody. Exactly. It's going to be Pivetta. I don't think there's even going to be a conversation piece more so it's going to be Bayo. It's going to be Pivetta. And I think a lot of it has to do with Cora. I think Cora likes that whole underdog story with Pivetta. I think that's one of the reasons we haven't heard an announcement, really an official one yet, is because he's trying to build that momentum and probably just push Nick Pivetta to just give him more, because I think that's when Pivetta kind of rises to that next step and occasion. It's when he gets to that lowest point, he wants to figure out a way to rise and shine. Is he your number one starter? That scares the living hell out of me. That's really not good if that's what you're heading into the season with, but this is what you got. I mean, I think if Lucas Giolito obviously hadn't gotten hurt, I think he would have been your number one guy there. Maybe there's some hope and prayer that Jordan Montgomery somehow gets here and he's your number one. But then granted, say they sign him tomorrow. You still got to get him ready through spring training and everything. I don't even think that he'd be possibly ready to go if opening day is here, what, 10 days, 9 days, whatever it is from now. So I think with what you have to go with right now is the Pivetta story and kind of that bulldog mentality that you want to see him rise to the occasion with. I think that's what you're going to see on opening day is Nick Pivetta.
I think it's going to be Bayo. I think that's the way they want to go. I'm not saying I agree with that, but I just think that's the way they're going to go. I think Pavetta's been the guy who's really earned it. You know, he's been kind of the unsung hero. He's had his struggles. He's overcome the struggles. Mostly been a good soldier about it. I mean, when he first got demoted last year, he was a little testy, but I can kind of forgive that, because that's, you know, in a lot of ways, just the competitive spirit of an athlete. And that is what it is. And the funny thing is we had our fantasy draft, and a few of us here on the podcast were in that last night. I had several opportunities to take Bayo. Someone eventually did. And I kept passing on Bayo because the strikeouts just aren't there yet. We're still not seeing an uptick in that early on in spring. And I'm not saying that you have to and that's how it's supposed to play out. But it's a very similar Bayo to last year. So we're not really seeing an Andrew Bailey effect yet. And Cody mentions, you know, the work that Pedro has put in. I mean, Bayo at this point is like Pedro's adopted son, basically. I mean, that just seems to be the relationship that they have. And with Pivetta, I mean, he's still striking out a little bit more than one per inning. And I mean, the last 3 or 4 months last year, when that slider was developed and he was commanding it, you know, regularly, he was a punch out machine, you know, almost Chris Sale like in a way. And it's going to be interesting to see this season if he finally has a consistent 6 months. I mean, he's going to give up that sixth spot, you know, two or three times anyway, regardless. But that with Nick Pivetta, that's what I'm kind of watching for this year. Can he, is that slider still going to be deadly mixed in with his curveball? And he still has a fastball that sits around 96, 97. With Bayo, you're still hoping for that extra step in his development. And I'm an optimist. I really am. But I think Pivetta is the guy. You know, he's the guy in that rotation, whether I like it or not, that I want in there in a big game right now.
And, you know, how far have we fallen from rotation past, right, where Pivetta is the guy? But I think the intangibles are something that he, you know, brings to the table as well, right? It's, you're not going to get the Zach Greinke nonsense, the Nestor, you know, pause game or whatever. You're just going to get a guy that wants the ball every fifth day or whenever it's given to him. He's going to go out there. He's going to fight. He's going to figure out ways to get outs. And, you know, that's the type of person that I think this team is trying to rally around. This is the type of sentiment that they're really talking about in spring training, right? They want to breed competition. They want to breed that fight and that anger and, you know, that willingness to go to the plate, to toe the rubber. And I think Pivetta embodies that.
I think Pivetta's biggest strength is that compete level, where he feels like every time he goes out for a start, it's a fight. And he's going to give everything in that fight, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. He's going to give you his all. He's got a rubber arm. He can give you innings, at least, if he's pitching and commanding the ball well. We saw pretty good flashes of it, at least last season, to have at least the chance to prove himself to go into this 2024 rotation. So let's see what he has to do and give.
The other interesting thing here is this is Nick Pivetta's walk year, and there didn't seem to be much motivation on giving him an extension. He will be 32 years old. Coming into next year. His birthday's in February, so he just turned 31. I'm just wondering, like, if we're not in it in July, he's getting traded. We're not, yep. This isn't Breslow, whether I like him or not. This is the whether I like it or not episode, apparently. He's not going to freeze in July like Haim. There's not going to be any analysis paralysis. If we're not in it, these guys are getting shipped. And Pivetta will probably go to a team that's contending, whether it's a World Series contender or a team just trying to bolster their wild card chances. And who's to say if he doesn't have a pretty good October that he's not next winter's Jordan Montgomery? And Scott Boris is not his agent, so, you know.
Bold take. I like it. That'd be something.
I mean, you just, Montgomery's been pretty consistent throughout his career, you know, at least the last few years, ERA, you know, in the threes. But Pivetta's more of a punch out guy. And I talked about the fantasy draft last night. I took Pivetta. He was the third or fourth pitcher I drafted. And it was the punch outs. That's why I took him over Bayo. And maybe I'll regret that, but it's something about Pivetta that is really tantalizing. And if he's only consistent, I don't see why he couldn't have a huge October with another team and get, you know, a pretty big deal. Look what Rodriguez just got, who's about the same age, you know, 5 years, $80 million roughly. I think that could be Pivetta's market. And a couple years ago, I would have laughed at that. You know, being in Major League Baseball, you know, if you go back to 2021, being in Major League Baseball in 2025, I wouldn't have said was a guarantee even for Nick Pivetta.
Remember something, too, with this whole thing. Nick Pivetta and all the other pitchers included. I've already mentioned the name once, but I want to see what the Andrew Bailey effect does with this rotation. this bullpen, this whole staff. It's got to be better than what we saw the past couple seasons. At least we've got a notable pitching coach and everything that knows the game, knows how to develop, knows how to get the best out of pitchers. I don't think we could fully say that ever since we had what was the guy that was our pitching coach? Then he went with Terry Francona.
Carl Willis.
Guardian.
Carl Willis.
Carl Willis, thank you. I think this is the chance for this team to prove a lot of the haters, maybe it's us, wrong, that we have a legit pitching coach and developer that can get the best out of these guys.
So let's just get into the rotation. Bayo and Pivetta obviously in. Cutter Crawford definitely in. Looks more and more like Tanner Houck will be in the starting rotation. He's had a pretty good spring. He did have a sub-2 ERA. Now I think it's in the mid-2s, but still very serviceable. And this is a guy, like Nick, you're saying, you're with a guy like Houck, you want the Andrew Bailey effect.
A big time.
To kick in here and make this guy a bona fide starter. But Houck's pitched 15 innings. Like Pivetta, has basically the same exact strikeout rate. How many walks? Only 3 walks in 15 innings. That is like this.
The control is a big thing with him, Terry. It's a big thing with Houck. And if they can get him in a spot where he's throwing consistent strikes, you and I have been Team Houck for a long time here. And I think this is going to get him over the hump.
Yeah, and he's been a fastball slider guy. I haven't even seen a Tanner Houck start yet, so I don't know what else they're trying to mix in. I know they've tried a splitter the last couple of years, which he's had mixed results with. But I think he's in. So if we agree on those 4, who gets the 5th spot?
It's got to be our boy Coop, right? I mean, I don't think it's breaking news to say anybody on this podcast, at least the one sitting in front of me, want Whitlock in the bullpen. You know, his stuff is electric, but I think it's better in spurts. I don't think he's an every fifth day guy. He can't stay healthy. We don't need to rehash that. They've already talked about Cooper Criswell being in the rotation. Maybe they go to a 6th man rotation just to kind of give each one of those guys a little bit more break, a little bit more rest, try to, you know, ease up a little bit of the innings on the arms. That could be something that we could be intrigued with, which, you know, I wouldn't necessarily hate to try to elongate some of these arms, right? Bayo dealt with arm soreness before. Pivetta's had his own injury history. I think Cutter Crawford is the only one that hasn't really had significant injury history, but he still had a decrease in velocity towards the end of the season last year. So Winkowski is definitely in the bullpen, which they've already committed to, which is awesome. I think he thrived in that role last year before he started to peter out as well. So I think it's going to be Cooper Criswell for the 5th, if not a 6-man rotation.
Nick.
I've actually been intrigued with Garrett Whitlock this spring. I know it's spring. I hear you all. I understand it, but I think a healthy Whitlock is what's huge for them right now. We haven't had a healthy Whitlock in, what, 2.5 years? The guy looks lean, mean, and ready to rock and roll. One of the things that I like when I was watching his start previously this past weekend is he's got a couple different pitches that he's working with, one of which is brand new for him. He invented a 1-seam fastball. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but the thing is sick. And I liked all the results that I was seeing from him this past weekend from stuff. Do I like him better in a bullpen? Absolutely. That is where I feel he belongs. But the stubbornness of the Boston Red Sox keep putting and pushing and pushing to put him in a rotation. If they do this, they need to tread very carefully here. Because if they do this and he gets hurt once again, could be a career ender for Garrett Whitlock. So I think they might be starting here with it. I don't love it, but if the guy's healthy and ready to actually prove that the past 2 seasons were a fluke and he can get back to what he was when he came up, sign me up.
Well, the data, you know, will pre- present a pretty good case for Whitlock here. You know, a 3.5 ERA. I think he's had one bad start, but he's actually, I think I said Houck has pitched the most innings. It's technically Whitlock by 2/3 of an inning, 15 and 2/3 to just 15 even with Houck. But the interesting thing here is the strikeouts are there for Whitlock, a little bit more than one strikeout per inning, which is what you want to see. That's a great, you know, strikeout rate. His whip is just under one. He's only issued two walks. So, wow, that's one less walk than Houck, which I was already impressed with. So if you're looking at the data, it looks very good. You can make a solid case for Whitlock. Having said that, I would take the unproven guy named Cooper Criswell, who's probably going to be fairly durable for you. I don't think you're going to break him out there. I'm still a skeptic. You know, what's he going to look like when the season starts? But that Seattle lineup isn't weak. I mean, they're just itching to finally win the West, I believe, last year. But still, you know, they're looking for that deep
go past the first round, right?
Yeah, that deep October run. Yeah. And so, yeah, so we'll see with Whitlock. But the interesting dynamic here is Chris Martin, last I checked, has not pitched a single inning in spring training. He's been dealing with groin thing. Kenley Jansen's made, I think, two or three appearances, but he had some back tightness today. So it's hard to know if that back end of the bullpen is really going to be ready, and not just physically ready, but ready from a performance standpoint. Are they going to hold down the eighth and ninth innings? And so it's kind of a mystery right now. You got a guy like Whitlock who's able to do it. So Cooper Criswell has never done that, you know, in that role. He's pitched out of bullpens, but not in high leverage. So we'll see. I mean, this Red Sox team right now is just, it's hard to know what their true identity is. They're 14-10 in spring training. That's not a bad record. I was kind of surprised when I pulled that up today. It did feel like they'd been, you know, winning more than they were losing, so I wasn't too surprised. But so just looking through this lineup here, couple observations. Willy Abreu not looking super robust at the moment. Jaren Duran has. I mean, he's hitting .321. He's still not drawing walks. That's what I really want to see from him. If he starts drawing walks, he's a much more complete offensive player. He did leg out a double today that would have been a single for 99.9% of every other major league player. So you're still getting the hustle from him, which is something that, you know, I'm not going to lie, it's kind of mesmerizing, but you're just not really seeing it with, you know, some of these young kids. Seidon Rafael, I guess, would be the exception. His average is ticking up. He's still, let's see. Oh, Devers has taken the lead in home runs, but Rafael just one less. But I would say he's probably won that center field job at this point. They're going to need a right-handed bat out there. Tyler O'Neill and his big muscles are
a joke.
Yeah, not in game action. I think it's a calf problem for him. So which he has dealt with in the past. Last year, the big problem was his back. So, you know, looks like the Hulk, but doesn't hold up like the Hulk. So I don't know. Any other observations?
My biggest thing is Cora came out, I think it was either yesterday or today, and gave a little bit of update on Vaughn Grissom. Doesn't look very promising on him. They're looking like it might be mid-May on when he might be back. So that means the Sox are going to have to survive with Reyes and Valdez as the second base kind of tandem. Cora did go into some depth saying that Reyes is going to be moving around the diamond quite a bit. So that means to me that they're going to be spelling Trevor Story early. Devers get him off his feet so it's not back-to-back, and kind of utilizing him in more of a super utility role. So you might be seeing a little bit more Emmanuel Valdez than you expected leading into your season. So maybe that gives him a little bit more something to prove, because there's a job to be earned here. I just think it's very comical how you trade Chris Sale, and then the guy that you get in return is now hurt, and you got another whole situation on your hands again. So that's the big thing I'm kind of looking at with what we're leading into, at least for the second base kind of whole situation.
Cody. I think it could be one of Cora's finer managing, performances this year if he kind of threads the needle appropriately. Nick, as you mentioned, there's going to be a lot of moving parts, right? Masataka going to be in DH. Is he going to go out to left field for time to time? Home games only, maybe. Who knows? Guys moving around the diamond. This team got worn down last year. There was only such a select few players that they could put out on the pitch game after game that, you know, the team really couldn't keep up, right? And so if Cora can find a way to maintain a level of health throughout the season, I think it's going to be time to eat some crow for a lot of us, because we have definitely bagged on him for the type of manager that he's been in the past couple of years. I know that I have, hands up. But, if the team continues to maintain a good attitude and shows fight and plays better defense and stays healthy, I'll be the first to say Cora is doing an amazing job.
And as a contract here, Cody, so, you know, he wants to prove something big time and get the council bucks.
He's going to the Dodgers. It's a done deal. Yeah, so
I can see it happening.
He's going to be managing Shohei and Yamamoto.
Mookie and everybody there.
And yep. Who's that other stud pitcher that's coming over from Japan? I forget his name already. Sasaki. Yeah, he'll give it another 2 or 3 years, and he'll be managing him as well. But all right, so final topic. Tim Wakefield will be honored on the home opener. And I guess most of the 2004 team will be in attendance. Nick, go ahead, take the lead on that one.
Yeah, so the news came out about a little bit of the whole idea for honoring, number one, the 2004 team. So we're coming up on 20 years. They've invited the entire team. That includes Curt Schilling. We know people have very strong opinions and emotions and everything about it. I personally understand it. I, emotions aside, understand that you win as a team and you lose as a team. If you remove Curt Schilling from that 2004 team, you very well could have not had a championship. So I don't like what happened with the whole thing with the Wakefield story getting leaked. I think that it's just because of his mouth. I don't think he did it out of spite or anything like that. But I do think the attention should not be on Schilling for this event. I don't want to see that happen. This should be about Tim Wakefield, one of the true legendary Red Sox that was a part of my generation growing up, all of yours, a true Red Sox, a hero, somebody that people absolutely adored and loved. Meant so much to the community, meant so much to the city, did so much charitable work. He's a person in my eyes that deserves that spotlight and a remembrance, and to always remember him. They will be putting 49 out in center field, kind of like they did for Ted Williams when Ted Williams passed. They're going to do a whole ceremony there. One of the things that I've heard too is there's lots of rumors about what are they going to do outs for Tim Wakefield. Well, we know we have the little commemoratory pin or patch that's going on the jerseys. But the other thing that's being talked about, and they're keeping it very low key right now, is there's going to most likely be a number ceremony and retirement of Tim Wakefield's number. And you know what, for a guy that was a class act and a true Red Sox, I think it's well deserved. I personally don't think anybody should wear number 49 again. I think that should be remembered in infantry for the Red Sox. That's just how much he meant for the team. And the last thing is, I know that they're trying to do something for Jersey Street to rename it Tim Wakefield Way. There was talk before about Jerry Remy Way. It's just all about, you know, city politics or what comes about that. But hey, you know, if they can get it to pass from everything, sign me up. I'll sign my name right on it for Tim Wakefield Way. I think it's a classy move.
Cody.
Nick touched on a lot of great points there. You know, I think a number retirement wouldn't necessarily be a bad move. You know, I think the nature of losing Tim Wakefield kind of plays into it. It wasn't, you know, just a silent passing of the night. It was, you know, he was kind of taken from us pretty abruptly. You know, he was in the booth not too long before he passed away, which was, you know, a real bummer. And, you know, I think definitely pulls at the heartstrings a little bit more. In terms of the ceremony, you know, you have a blanket statement, right? We are doing the 20-year celebratory anniversary of the 04 team that won it all. We're inviting all the members that were a part of that team, right? That part's the easy part. It's how do you handle the ceremony? That makes me nervous, right? The Red Sox in years past have shown a proclivity for bungling these type of operations. And it's a real bummer, and it's something that makes me very nervous when it comes to a remembrance of a member that meant so much to so many, not only throughout the organization, but through Red Sox Nation, through generations of Red Sox baseball, right? He was somebody that you would go and watch, not necessarily because you thought it was going to be lights out, but just because it was something different and something exciting. You know, podcasts, or I guess radio spots before there were podcasts, used to play, you know, like predict the Wakefield line, predict the Daisuke line, and things of that nature. And you know, he was just a fun, quirky wrinkle to the game that we got to watch and love and grew up with. And I think that, you know, you can't tell the story of, you know, our fandom at the very least of Red Sox baseball without Tim Wakefield. And I, you know, I think that's kind of what it boils down to, right? Is he's in the fabric of Fenway Park. He's in the fabric of Red Sox Nation. And, you know, if you were to retire the number, yeah, he might not have the counting statistics for it. You know, he might be one of the last few 200 game winners, but, sometimes it's a little bit more than just accounting stats, at least for me.
It'll be interesting to see which way they go. I think personally, I'd rather see the streets get named after him, or, you know, a part of Fenway get named after him. I think we're already overdue with that with Jerry Remy in some capacity. Yeah, and it's just crazy. Every August, we've got two or three days of the Jimmy Fund, and they always set their goals, and it seems like we exceed them year after year. I shouldn't say we, but the, you know, all of Red Sox Nation and probably other teams too that donate as well, all chip in. And it's just crazy that after all these years of, you know, all that work with the Jimmy Fund, we lose two, you know, you lose two members of your community that, you know, meant so much and, you know, in much different ways. I mean, Jerry Remy was kind of like the voice for Red Sox fans, and Wakefield was that, you know, reliable back end of the rotation guy that was there for big moments, you know, 04, 07. I know 2003 didn't end well with the Boone thing, but Wakefield was a stud throughout that whole postseason. That's why he was in that spot, because he was just so good. And, you know, history didn't play out great on that particular night, but man, I mean, you can't tell the story of the curse breaking Boston Red Sox without there being a full chapter on Tim Wakefield. And hopefully they do something. As far as numbers being retired, we talked about that before we come on. I still would rather, I mean, if they retire it, okay, fine. You know, I'm certainly not going to protest it, but I think the elite of the elite, you know, those are the guys that should get their numbers retired. You know, every so often Pedroia's name gets brought up, and, you know, I wouldn't do it for him even. So, you know, but they're going to make sure Tim Wakefield's memory, you know, never fades for at least the next couple generations. And, you know, I think that's what we really want.
I think one of the things to the whole reasoning on the number is all of the contributions on and off the field. You know, there's a lot of athletes that are all just about on the field performance and all the accolades that they can check off from everything. I think because Tim Wakefield has meant so much to so many people that are fans or a part of the Red Sox and everything, I think this is one of those, at least for me, one of those rare exceptions where you think about everything that he's meant to others on putting that number up in that right field facade. I think this has a lot of meanings and a lot of examples that kind of emulate what Johnny Pesky was. You know, Johnny Pesky was a great player for a while for the Red Sox, but he played for the Tigers and other teams and everything there. He had just about every single role as a coach, as a broadcaster, as a fan, as just somebody that was always a part of the Red Sox. And I think that's what the team is looking at here for Wakefield, is that number's going up for, in a way, a sentimental piece of everybody's heart for Red Sox Nation.
I don't think I could add any more. I think we all pretty much hit it on the head there.
Oh, there's one more thing I do want to mention.
Go right ahead.
Well, the one last thing I want to mention is 2004, if you're inviting everybody, that means you invite Nomar Garciaparra. He got a ring. He was there for the team. He was there through thick and thin from stuff. Let's be respectful on that, too. You win as a team, you lose as a team. Make sure Nomar gets an invitation, too. And I hope he's there. I hope he's there.
I think he will be. I mean, if Curt Schilling's going, I mean, it should be pretty easy for Nomar to just kind of hide somewhere and just kind of, you know.
I would hope.
Hang out with his old teammates. But yeah, all right. So I guess we will wrap on that. Finally, a show ending at a reasonable time. We've been blowing well past the hour with, you know, with some of the shows, and it was nice to talk about a big development. You guys in the audience have no idea how challenging this winter has been, with just the lack of moves and all this underwhelming stuff. And even though we were not in it for Blake Snell, we kind of needed that domino to fall, and it finally did. So good to get that one out of the way. I'd be shocked if Jordan Montgomery doesn't have a team in the next 48 to 72 hours. They're pitching in the, I think they call it the Boris Institute, which is an athletic complex. And as of a week ago, Montgomery was up to 65 pitches in a, I don't know if it was a simulated game or some type of side session, but he's working on at least getting stretched out. So he should be ready to join a team and then probably be one of their starting five as soon as the season kicks off. So we'll be back to cover that when it happens. And everyone have a great start to your week. Take care.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.